Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, we got a lot to pack in here on this Monday morning of Montana Talks. We're going to be talking nuclear energy and Colstrip and more later on in the hour. Plus, earlier this morning, I had a great conversation with retired Major General Paul Vallely, talking about Syria and the news out of Syria and the toppling of the Assad regime. Fascinating insight. Now I want to hear from Dr. Mehrdad Kia from the University of Montana. Dr. Kia will be on with us here in just a few minutes. So let's jump right into it. We've got Missoula City Council member Sandy Vasika kicking off the program this morning. Sandy, first off, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays. Hope you had a great Thanksgiving, and thanks for being with us here on this Monday morning.
Well, thank you. Yes, Merry Christmas, Happy Thanksgiving, and all the other Happy Holidays to you, too. Very happy to be here today. I am being one of the few fiscally conservative members and conservative members on council. I don't get many things passed. So when my urban camping ordinance passed last Monday, 9-3, I was super excited. I'm used to being on the other side of that 9-3 vote. So I'm very excited that we amended our ordinance that we originally put in place in June to disallow camping in parks and made a couple of other amendments, making it actually punishable if you do break the ordinance. And so I'm just very excited that a lot of my colleagues came together with me realizing that this is not working. We need to figure out what we can do to make our constituents and our neighborhoods a lot safer and happier.
Yeah, I think I was taking a few days off, but I was still, you know, cross-posting some news stories onto our Montana Talks website, and I shared this headline from our friend Peter Christian. City Council outlaws urban camping in Missoula public parks. And I was like, do my eyes deceive me? Am I reading what I'm really reading here? Is the Missoula City Council actually going to crack down on what's been going on? Because you were the one that told us about the city parks where you couldn't even take your kid to the park because of all the, you know, crazy things that the transients were doing, defecating in the water fountains, lewd behavior in front of people in public. And so the parks were, you were just unable to even go to the park with your kids.
Exactly. And I remember the article that you wrote last year about the parks from 2023. And I emailed that article over to Armstrong and Getty, and they actually talked about that on their show. And it has just been a huge pain in the butt for over a year that people who pay taxes cannot use the parks that their taxes are going towards. And it was just getting a lot less safe. There were needles. This one poor mother, she was a new mother. She came to council on Monday night, and she was almost breaking into tears, but she held strong. I was really proud of her. And she was talking about how one of her the kids in her friend group brought up, a two-year-old brought a needle to her mom and said, "Hey, what are we supposed to do with this?" And one of the advocates that was against this ordinance change said, "You need to teach your kids to not touch needles." I'm like, well, okay, yeah, granted, you should teach your kids that, but it shouldn't be an issue that we're dealing with on a regular basis in the parks that we are paying for.
That's right. Well, hold that thought. I want to hear more about this new law, and if it's got some teeth behind it, stand by. More with Missoula City Council member Vasika.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Yeah, if any of you have kids or grandkids and you ever watched that cartoon movie Bolt, I'm like one of the animals in that cartoon movie Bolt. Do my eyes deceive me? Am I seeing what I'm really seeing here? The Missoula City Council bans encampments in city parks because, yeah, it was getting crazy. Tent cities just overtaking these parks, transients defecating in water fountains. They were, well, I'm just going to say it. I know there might be kids listening, but they've heard worse on the playground. I mean, and while they've seen worse on the playgrounds in the parks in Missoula, you had transients masturbating in front of people in public, just all sorts of crazy stuff. So, Sandy, it sounds like this was your ordinance, so you know the details here. My question was, okay, so they're saying they're going to ban these encampments, but will they actually enforce it? Will it have any teeth to it now to prevent these takeovers of city parks?
Yes, there is actually teeth to it, and it sounds like they will be actually banning it. So when I approached the city attorney wanting to ban the camping in parks when that Grants Pass decision got overturned by the Supreme Court, I wanted to just repeal the entire ordinance, but I was talked into kind of a compromise of just banning in parks, and then some other colleagues of mine approached me with some other amendments that I agreed with. So we all kind of came together on this, or I guess half of the council and I came together on this ordinance change. And one of the changes that my colleagues brought to me was actually making it a misdemeanor offense punishable by a $50 fine instead of just a municipal infraction. So I talked with the chief of police and other city officials, and it does sound like it is actually enforceable. It is up to the discretion of police officers to enforce this this misdemeanor offense, just like when you get a speeding ticket, it's up to them to give you a warning. Because one of my colleagues' concerns was that, are we criminalizing homelessness? And I said, no, we're just criminalizing criminal behavior. But if somebody is just out on their luck, they didn't know there was this ordinance and they're, camping off to the side. They're not bothering anybody. They're not doing drugs. They're not doing it like defecating or masturbating in front of people. Then the cops can just say, hey, you know, like you didn't know, you can move along, you have to pack up your stuff and leave. Or if it's one of the repeat offenders, which it sounds like we have a ton of those that are just walking all over us and they say, we are above the law. There's actually a couple of Missoulian articles about certain perpetrators of this that are thinking that they are above the law. I'm going to blatantly ignore this ordinance. Now we can actually give them a misdemeanor offense, have a fine attached to it, so that folks cannot take advantage of us and the kind folks of our city who want to help those down on our luck and want to punish the people that are taking advantage. So I'm really excited that it's now more black and white instead of having the ambiguous distances from playgrounds or the water play areas or basketball courts and the time location that you can actually camp at. Now it's just purely black and white, easy to enforce by the police and security, so that it can be enforced. So I'm very excited about that.
What do you think? Well, and one thing I know about our great law enforcement all across Montana too is they know who typically these people are. The worst offenders in the transient community, they typically know these people by name. They typically know their street nicknames because you see the same offenders over and over again, and then there's just nobody to back them up to actually hold these people accountable. Sounds like that's finally going to take place. What do you think convinced a majority of the Missoula City Council to see things your way finally?
You know, I have to give a huge shout out to the No Camping in Parks campaign. That case came out of nowhere. We were kind of approaching this. I was approaching it from my authority on council as I'm upset with camping in parks. And then this whole citizen campaign came about. No Camping in City Parks came up by David Moore in Missoula, and there were signs everywhere. They were coming to city council meetings. They were signing petitions. They were emailing us, calling us. And they were really hitting it with force. And I think they got over 1,000 people to sign this petition to get us to pass an ordinance amendment to disallow the camping in parks. And I'm really proud of all the citizen turnout with that. Because in June, when we originally passed an ordinance to deal with the Grants Pass decision, all we had come to our city council meetings, even though it was until 4 a.m. for two Mondays in a row, all we had were the homeless advocates. And granted, they did make some points about criminalizing homelessness, but they were basically saying that we cannot enforce any rules with these folks and they can basically do whatever they want. And it was only them that came out to the meeting. So this time around, when the No Camping in Parks campaign came about, we had so many people come to these council meetings, to the committee meetings, and letting us know that this will not stand. We cannot keep living like this. we have to make a change. So huge shout out to all of our constituents throughout the entire city that came out and said enough is enough, because I couldn't have done it without them.
Well, how cool is that too? Because, you know, in a city where it can often feel like your voice doesn't matter, it doesn't matter how bad things get, they're never going to change anything because they simply have the majority on their side. But we, the people, stood up, spoke out, said something, and change finally took place. I also think that even some of these places, I think people are realizing that the establishment do things the way you've always done them. People aren't tolerating it as much anymore.
Exactly. Folks are realizing that they can't just sit idly by. You know, it just keeps getting worse and worse. These policies that have been about for almost half a decade now, they're not working, because I don't remember this being a problem pre-COVID. And granted, I never really, I guess I didn't pay attention that much. Maybe I'm naive, or maybe it just wasn't happening that bad. But what's been happening with the rules and the establishment for the past 5-6 years, it's not working. We do need to make a change, and the citizens have noticed it. And it is an election year coming up, and I think that everyone, the citizen side, the elected official side, everyone's realizing that, you know, we have to at least compromise with each other to figure out what can be done so that people can utilize the amenities of living in a municipality, paying these high property taxes that are going to make more people homeless.
That's
we
right.
have to at least give folks the ability to use these amenities that they're paying for their house rights for.
Well, so, great job, Azusa City Council Member Sandy Vasica. Thanks for all your efforts. Thanks for joining us. Great job. Appreciate your time this morning. All right, quick break. Dr. Mayor.Key after this.
Save big this holiday season, all in the Kroger app. Buy 2, get 3 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit 2, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Talking about the issues that matter to Montana statewide. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Yeah, one more interesting thing. I was chatting with Sandy Vasica from the Missoula City Council during the break. She talked about how, you know, maybe she just never noticed the transient problem before, or the transient problem in our city parks in Missoula before. But, you know, just in the last few years, it just seems like it's gotten significantly worse. And I asked her, I said, how old's your kid? How old? And she's like, yeah, about, what, 3-4 years old, I think she told me. And anyway, she's like, oh, yeah, having a kid changes everything. Having kids changes everything. And so, yeah, so some of that stuff that was going on in the city parks, maybe a few years ago, you didn't like it, and you're like, oh, man. But when you have little kids, totally different ballgame, isn't it? Totally different ballgame. All right. Well, it's great to have Dr. Mayor.Key back on the show with us. Dr. Key, always an honor. Thanks for joining us here, especially at the last minute, given the big breaking news. It's great to have you on the show.
It's wonderful being with you, Aaron, and thank you very much for your invitation.
Yeah, Dr. Key, for those of you who aren't familiar, is a professor of history and the director of the University of Montana's Central and Southwest Asian Studies Center. I'm sure our listeners have already seen or heard it in the national news. But yeah, the Syrian government basically collapsed over the weekend. Syrian President Bashar Assad has fled to Russia. And so just a crazy news update over the weekend. What's your read?
Well, this is a very complicated situation. As you know, since 2011, Syria has been going through a civil war. And Russia and Iran, the Islamic regime in Iran, and Putin in Russia tried to save Assad from his own people. But I think October 7, 2023, Hamas's savage attacks against Israel changed the entire configuration of power. Iran has been supporting Hamas. Iran is also supporting another proxy, Hezbollah, or the Party of God in Lebanon. And the Islamic regime in Iran unleashed Hamas from Gaza and Hezbollah from Lebanon against Israel, despite repeated warnings from Israel. And since then, it has been an all-out war. Israel has more or less demolished Hamas, as you know, and then went after Hezbollah in Lebanon and basically destroyed its leadership. And the Iranian capability to defend and protect Assad in Syria diminished considerably, and that gave an opportunity to the opponents of the Assad regime in Syria, who are backed partially by Turkey, to actually march to first Aleppo and then Damascus and seize power. This is a huge blow to both Russia and the Islamic regime in Iran. But before celebrating, I think we should also be aware that the people who just removed Assad are themselves very dangerous. They come from an offshoot of ISIS, Al-Qaeda, and they used to be really radical terrorists at best. And we should be really careful, and the United States and Israel are very much aware of it. I'm very worried about the situation, because Syria, the situation in Syria can spill over into neighboring countries. So the situation is unsettled right now, and we have to watch what unfolds in the coming days and weeks.
Yeah, very interesting. So last hour I was able to catch up with retired Major General Paul Vallely, and he was actually on the ground with the Syrian rebels back in 2012, and I remember having him on the radio back then as well. So my kind of layman's theory was that, okay, so Iran got so distracted by, you know, going after Israel, and Israel, you know, kicked their butts. And then Russia was so distracted with their war in Ukraine that now Assad didn't have, you know, Russia and Iran to sit there and help prop him up. And so that's how these rebels were able to take over power. Sounds like that's your assessment there as well.
Exactly the same. And I think what happened, what we now realize, is basically Assad was in power because of Iranian troops on the ground and Russian jet fighters in the skies. And once Putin became too distracted in Ukraine to help him, and once Iran, you know, really lost a great deal in Lebanon because of Israeli attacks against its proxy, Hezbollah, basically it was forced to rush all the Hezbollah fighters from Syria into Lebanon. And that created a vacuum that the rebels used in order to march against Assad. I have to tell you, this is just a personal comment. Yesterday, President Biden taking credit for what has transpired in Syria, after months of pressuring Prime Minister Netanyahu in Israel to not do this or that, and de-escalate and allow this and allow that. And if Netanyahu had listened to President Biden, none of this would have happened. It is because Israel persisted in attacking Hezbollah, in attacking Hamas, that we have the situation that we have now, and Assad is gone. It shows how wrong-headed, in fact, the foreign policy of the United States was. And it's incredible that somebody will come and take credit for what he did not want to happen and, in fact, try to reverse what the reality on the ground was.
That's right. Well, and also look at the way, you know, President Biden undermined Saudi Arabia and the crown prince there, and really, I think, undermined the entire Abraham Peace Accords, which ended up causing so much havoc throughout the Middle East, and now a major setback for the terrorist regime in Tehran in all this news. Now, for our listeners who don't remember, you actually fled Iran. You grew up in Iran, and you fled when the Shah fell before the terrorists took over. So this is something you followed very closely, not just through your role as a professor and the director of your organization, but from a personal level.
Yeah, this we have been waiting, as you know, and as you mentioned, for a situation to a rise where we can hope once again that the people of Iran can rise and get rid of this regime in Tehran. And I think we have some of the pieces now in place, but we need U.S. support. And I'm not speaking about U.S. military support. I'm not even speaking about financial support. We need moral support, and we need technological support on the ground. Because, as you know, once the people rise, they will try to shut down the internet. They will try to shut down the available technology. And we hope that the new administration would provide the Iranian activists on the ground with sufficient amount of infrastructural assistance so they can do to the Islamic regime what just happened to Assad in Syria.
The rebels have taken power, but how and will they be able to hold on to power? That was one of the other questions I threw to General Vallely earlier this morning.
Yeah. I think you have a very fragmented and fractured Syria, as you know very well, Aaron. In Northeast, we have, if I'm not mistaken, about 900 U.S. advisors and trainers working with the Kurds. The Kurds are very good fighters. They are our allies. I hope and pray that we do not abandon them. They are under danger of being attacked by the Islamists and also by Turkish troops that have been sent into Syria by Erdogan, the president of Turkey. There is also another Syrian movement coming from south, from inside Jordan. They also receive some support from U.S. and Jordan. There are some democratic forces on the ground, but the bulk of people who seized Damascus belong to this movement, Tahrir al-Sham, which is the liberation of Levant, they call themselves. They are an offshoot of ISIS. Now they claim and they swear that they are reformed, they have changed, but I don't believe it until I see fundamental changes in their attitude and ideas. The last time we saw them, they were decapitating innocent human beings and raping women.
Mm. This has to be one of the most complex situations on the ground, I'd imagine. I mean, even when you compare it to the rest of the Middle East, this has to be even more complex given all of the players that have been on the ground, Iran, Russia, the U.S., and oftentimes openly flying their own flags in different parts of the territory. And now the question is, well, who actually leads this group of rebels? General Vallely had a much more positive summation of who these leaders are, like General Turkey and others, who he says he's been working very closely with over the past few years. But I guess we'll see in the days and weeks ahead.
Yeah, I think the role of Erdogan and Turkey is dubious. I mean, I think Erdogan is dreaming of recreating a Turkish empire, the Ottoman Empire of the past, and he's trying to exert his influence, especially in northern Syria. He has another agenda, as you know, that is to crush the Kurds. And the Kurds are the best allies we have on the ground. So we have to be very, very careful not to hand the Kurds on a silver plate to Erdogan, who will destroy them. They deserve to enjoy at least autonomy, some kind of democracy. And the reason I'm not as optimistic is I'm very pessimistic about the role of Turkey. On the other hand, Israel has now moved in starting last night and has taken over some of the territory between itself and Syria.
Very interesting. Dr. Kia, we got to hold it there. I got to hit the hard break, but fascinating getting your insight. We'll have to get you back on the show for a full hour here soon.
This is where Montana Talks at with Lane Nordland.
Last week during the 140th Montana Stock Growers Convention held in Billings, I sat down with Ambassador Greg Dowd, who served as the chief agriculture negotiator for President Donald Trump during his first term. He said the biggest concern he sees for U.S. farmers and ranchers continues to be China.
Well, half the hogs on the planet are in China. And if they decide to change what they're feeding them or the geopolitics or they have a disease, it has enormous ripple effects on all agricultural commodity markets, what their relationship is with Brazil and soybeans. How much beef are they buying from Brazil? Do we have access to this market or that market? If China decides to increase the size of its dairy herd and no longer New Zealand can sell their dairy products into China, then their New Zealand product backs up into our markets and causes problems in our prices.
Dowd says he expects President-elect Donald Trump to continue to seek new and expanded trade deals while utilizing tariffs to gain leverage for U.S. farmers, ranchers, and U.S.-based businesses. For my full conversation with the former agricultural trade ambassador, Greg Dowd, just visit my Facebook page, Lane Northland, Ag Broadcaster. Have a great day, everyone. I'm Lane Northland.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, we should have another guest joining us here in just a second in terms of talking about nuclear energy, possibly adding nuclear into the mix for our friends in Colstrip and elsewhere. So, we should have a guest joining us here in just a second. Pardon me for just a second here because I got some breaking news to share with you here. Finally, some justice. I was working on sending out a tweet here. Let me finalize it while we're live on the air. Yeah, finally, some justice. Daniel Penny has been found not guilty. Here we go. This is from FoxNews.com. This alert just went out. Daniel Penny has been found not guilty. It comes after jurors told the court Friday morning they could not reach an agreement on the top charge, second-degree manslaughter, and prosecutors moved to dismiss it. But then this crazy judge and that crazy left-wing prosecutor in New York City, what they did was then they charged him with a lesser charge. And there were some legal analysts who were saying that that should have caused the whole thing to be declared a mistrial. Just because, okay, because the defense prepares their case based on the charge that is facing him. They don't prepare their case based on some other charge. Well, then they try to throw this other charge at the jury to now convict him of at the last minute. And so there were some who were saying this should have just been an all-out mistrial. Daniel Penny, for those of you who don't recall, Daniel Penny is a 26-year-old Marine Corps veteran and an architecture student. He was charged with manslaughter and criminally negligent homicide for the subway chokehold death of Jordan Neely, a 30-year-old homeless man with schizophrenia who barged onto the train shouting death threats while high on a type of synthetic marijuana known as K2. And so, yes, finally some justice here as Daniel Penny is found not guilty. He never should have been charged in the first place. It was such a miscarriage of justice that he was even targeted like that in the first place. All right, let me see. Yeah, we're supposed to have a guest on with us right now, so we'll see if they're calling in. If for some reason we got our dates wrong, though, Caden, we could probably get Dr. Mehrdad Kia back on the phone because it'd be fun to catch up some more with him to talk about this whole situation in Syria. But I think if not, we'll be able to get him on later in the week here. Let's see. One other thing, I want to go back to this conversation as I was talking with Dr. Mehrdad Kia about the news out of Syria. When I spoke with General Paul Vallely, retired General Paul Vallely, who was a Fox News national security correspondent early on in the war on terror, he's now got his Stand Up America Foundation, where he still closely follows national security issues and military defense issues and so much more. But when I spoke with him, I'll see if I can pull up the audio for you. I'll get it on our Montana Talks website for sure here. Later this morning, I'm still waiting for the full audio to ingest right now. But he told me, he says, look, I know these guys who just took over, who ousted Assad. He said, these are all the generals that I've been working with here, General Turkey. He says he talks with these generals in Syria on a near daily basis. And I remember we had General Vallely on the radio with us about, you know, probably back in 2012, either when he was still on the ground in Syria or when he just got home from Syria. I had him on the radio back then on my old show. And so that's why I thought, hey, let's get his take on this news out of Syria. And he says, no, these are the guys that I've been working with. They are not Al-Qaeda. They are not an ISIS offshoot. Now, that being said, of course, he would probably even acknowledge that there will be ISIS and Al-Qaeda elements that will try to take advantage of the situation, that will try to capitalize on the situation and seize power. But nonetheless, he says that the rebels that are responsible for taking out Assad and who have taken over the country, that they will be able to, that not only did they were they the ones that took power, but they are the ones that will be able to hold the power. And he believes the conditions are there for them to do just that. Either way, though, I really like this soundbite from Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton. Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton was on Fox and Friends earlier this morning. The U.S. launching dozens of airstrikes against ISIS camps and targets in Syria following the ousting of Bashar Assad over the weekend. Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton telling Fox and Friends he believes the U.S. should work with its allies to ensure there is a new stable government in Syria, but insists they need to protect their interests and ensure no one takes advantage of the situation.
I think we have to be clear-eyed. You know, Ronald Reagan used to say about Soviet Russia, trust but verify. I think in this situation, we need to distrust and verify anyone who might come to power in Syria.
Yeah, but President-elect Trump urging the U.S. to stay out of the conflict, with Vice President-elect J.D. Vance echoing that sentiment, saying, quote, "This is not our fight." Trump also warned Putin to secure a ceasefire in Ukraine and suggested that Ukraine might receive less aid under his administration. Trump's return to the global stage was marked by his appearance at the Notre Dame reopening in Paris, where he received a red carpet treatment typically reserved for a sitting president and warm greetings from world leaders. Absent from the festivities, of course, was President Biden. Did you see that empty chair in between President Trump and Jill Biden? The first lady was there, and she looked very happy to see Donald Trump, which leads to more speculation that a lot of people think maybe Joe Biden and Jill actually voted for Donald Trump because of the animosity between them and Kamala Harris. Okay, we've got our guest on the, our next guest on the phone lines now with us here. Christine King is the director of the Gateway for Innovation in Nuclear program that is run out of the Idaho National Laboratory. And apparently the GAIN program has been doing some work in Colstrip, Montana. Christine, great to have you on the show. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, thank you for having me. So excited.
Well, first off, how would you describe the Idaho National Laboratory to our listeners? I, from my time in the military, I got a great briefing, and I could see some of what I was briefed on is on the website, so I wouldn't be sharing any big secrets here or anything. But you've got amazing capabilities at the Idaho National Laboratory. If I'm not mistaken, didn't it used to be known as INEAL back in the day, for those of you who've driven down that stretch of interstate through Idaho?
Yes, yes. The lab has actually been around for over 70 years. And, you know, our primary focus is on nuclear energy, but we do several other things as well. It's about 6,000 employees in Idaho Falls, and we have a significant amount of property in what we call out in the desert. We operate 4 test reactors today. Some of them testing some of the most extreme consequences that you might imagine for a nuclear reactor. But we are an applied engineering lab. And so we kind of bridge the gap between foundational science and commercialization of technology, which is really where, our program fits in as well. Given the size of the lab and all the capabilities that we have, and not just our lab, but other national labs across the nation, it can be hard to find the expert that you need. So our job is really to help that public-private partnership and those folks that are interested in exploring nuclear energy. They know the questions they have. They're just not real sure who to talk to. That's where we help out.
When I was in Colstrip, Montana earlier this summer, you know, I really appreciated the SEMDC, the Economic Development Group there. Jim was talking about how, look, down the road, down into the future, we need to look at making Colstrip an energy hub. Yes, coal is a part of that mix. Yes, the coal mine and the coal power plant are part of that mix, but wind and solar have been added in the mix. Why not add nuclear into the mix is what everybody's asking as well.
Yeah, no, I've been working with that group for several years, along with retired Senator Dwayne Ankeny and Representative Gary Perry and Jim Williams, the mayor of the town. So I'm a big believer in energy diversity as we go forward. Every technology has its pros and cons. And as we have the opportunity to add to our energy system, as we have increasing demand right now, and to add renewable portfolios, but also making sure that we're ensuring that we have reliable 24/7 baseload power. And that's what Colstrip represents for the state of Montana. It's your largest baseload generating station in the state. And so the future of Colstrip is not only important to Montana, but also important to your neighbors that might be relying on importing power from that station in the future.
And the demand for electricity continues to climb. It's not like the demand for electricity is lowering, so we should be adding more electricity to the mix, not taking electricity out of the equation. But at some point, those coal facilities will eventually retire, so what do we do then? Hold that thought. Quick break. Back right after this.
Hey, the Hot Spring Spas and Hot Tub Company, Friends Recommend Studio. Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, back to it here with Christine King, the director of the GAIN Initiative under the Idaho National Laboratory. Christine, yeah. If we decided to go the path of nuclear at Colstrip, to add nuclear into the energy hub mix, what would that look like?
Well, I think that could look like a lot of different things. As I was mentioning before, there's you might want to consider a diverse amount of technologies. And so you might see nuclear be added in parallel to wind and solar, or even other battery storage technologies to give you some peaking power. But the new reactors that we're talking about are smaller than what we have built in the past. So what we have operating in the United States today and globally are typically 1,000 megawatt units. And they have a much larger capacity factor, so they produce more energy than your coal station. So the capacity factors being so high, we maybe don't need to replace megawatt for megawatt what you have at Colstrip, which allows us to consider doing something like a small modular reactor, building something that's hundreds of megawatts and maybe multiple units. And those multiple units could give you the capability of doing some cogeneration if you wanted to if you have a large power supplier that you wanted to build close to load. The other thing is you can go all the way to the other end, though, where folks have microreactors. And so when you talk about an energy hub and thinking about the different types of folks that might want to be adjacent to an energy hub, there's a lot of different opportunities. These reactors are also different from a perspective of the safety profile. And that's really taking advantage of the physics. So, for example, a fast reactor, it can't overheat. As the reactor gets hotter, the nuclear reaction actually becomes less efficient. So there's those types of choices that have been made in these new reactors as well.
Yeah, I listened to a fascinating podcast a few months ago by the renowned Canadian psychologist, Dr. Jordan Peterson, and he did a big topic on nuclear power because, you know, Canada, they're having these same conversations we are. And then, you know, places like Saskatchewan, and we've got listeners in the province of Saskatchewan right now, and, you know, they've got high deposits of uranium, so uranium mining potential as well that goes into this. But the point that he was expressing is that, again, this is not like the technology from 40, 50 years ago. You can have these smaller reactors. There's companies like Intel Corporation that are basically building their own nuclear, you know, small modular reactors to power their own data centers, for example, right now. And you don't have the cooling that you would have needed before with some of the older technology, right?
Yeah, the project down in Wyoming at the Naughton Station, the Natrium Project, led by TerraPower, and PacifiCorp, they've actually published that they expect their reactor will only use 2/3 of the water that the existing coal station, the Naughton station, uses today. So, you know, a long time ago, a friend of mine in the West told me that, you know, water's for fighting and whiskey's for drinking.
That's right.
So getting a third of your power back in the West is huge.
How is the transition going so far with that? Because there was a coal plant in Wyoming that was going to retire anyway. So they said, well, why don't we convert it to a nuclear facility? You can take the same employees that work for a coal plant and retrain them for a nuclear plant. And boom, there you go.
Yeah. Well, the workforce is an incredible asset. But what they're doing right now is they have their construction permit. So they're starting to break ground and actually work on the civil construction. They've been working on their environmental permits. And they're finalizing their design. They expect to submit their design application to the NRC next year.
Very interesting. Well, Christine King, great to catch up with you. And, yeah, keep us posted next time you're back in Colstrip or back in Montana, because I imagine this is a topic that may come up during the upcoming legislative session as well. Our Rural Montana magazine, that's a product of the Montana Electric Cooperatives, they've done some great reporting on nuclear and some of these smaller reactors as well. So I know it's a topic our listeners are very much interested in. Christine King, thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. See you. Let's see. Yeah, I will get that full audio of my conversation with Major General Paul Vallely talking about Syria. I'll get that on our Montana Talks website here shortly after we wrap up the show so you can see some of the big takeaways from his perspective. All right. Thanks for your time.
Media Minute with Howard Kurtz.
NBC's Kristen Walker did a very good job interviewing Donald Trump in the Meet the Press sit-down that aired yesterday. It reminded me of the two interviews I've done with the president-elect where he was serious and specific, and she asked many follow-up questions rather than just moving on. So she got him to back off his campaign pledge to appoint a special prosecutor to investigate Joe Biden. He also said he would deport all 11 million illegal immigrants. That seems unrealistic, but he said he would negotiate a way to keep the dreamers in the United States. And he wouldn't back off the 2020 election. But you look at the coverage. Trump signals an aggressive opening, threatening jail for his political foes. New York Times, Washington Post had a similar headline. Yes, he did say that, but also said it wouldn't be his decision. He would leave that to the Justice Department or the FBI. With your Media Minute, Howie Kurtz, Fox News.